Good afternoon. Petersburg's local tribe now owns the community's first canoe in over a century. The canoe will launch from Petersburg this summer with a group of people traveling to Juneau for the biennial celebration festival. KFSK's Olivia Rose visited the local tribe's warehouse to learn more and to see the process behind bringing the canoe to life.
Inside the warehouse of Petersburg's local tribe, John Garcia III dips a brush into a can of red-colored boat paint and pauses. Ever so carefully, he applies it to a formline design he drew on the side of a new canoe. He says he's been spending about 12 hours a day on this project.
That's love, I tell ya. I put love into everything I do. Think it came off.
Garcia is a Thlinkit tribal artist based in Juneau. He says while it's been a number of years since he worked on a canoe project like this, he's been doing formline art for two decades.
These few little lines are just going to pop, and it's just going to bring it to life. And man, it's so fun, and I love sharing that. It's not artwork for us. It's just culture. And we have to pass that on.
The white Thlinkit-style fiberglass canoe barely fits inside the warehouse. It's just short of 40 feet long and needs about a dozen polers for its journey to Juneau for celebration this summer. There's a few things about this canoe that make it special. It's the first one the local tribe has owned, and the first canoe the community has had in a century or so.
Being the first canoe in Petersburg in 100 years, it really drove me to just be like, oh yeah, I gotta be part of this.
Garcia says this design is a killer whale transformation.
We have a lot of creation stories where our people, you know, evolved from the creatures that lived here. And so this kind of plays on, you know, the coming from the sea, the people coming onto the land. And so this is really about people.
Canoes typically represent a single clan, but this design is more general, so it doesn't leave anyone out. Petersburg's tribal members chose the concept, and Garcia designed what it looks like.
So yeah, see, there's the hand, the body, the hand, the arm that goes down. This is the hip.
Three big Chilkat faces line the center of the canoe. And on each end, there's a human figure with a large killer whale head and dorsal fin.
There's some very fine lines that need to be done on the teeth, the eyes. I always do those last. That's kind of a bringing to life. That's a being able to breathe and eat. And then the eyes come in and you're able to see. And so it's, not just important. It's really sacred.
To Garcia, everything is for the children. His young daughter will join him in a couple hours to hold his hand while he paints. And he says it's important to share the experience. He says art is culture and a way to pass culture on to the next generation. That also underscores the significance of Petersburg's canoe and where it's bringing people.
You know, back several generations, all of our culture was basically beat out of us. We couldn't have a kuik. We couldn't have potlatches. We could not have ceremonies. This was all a revival of culture in Southeast Alaska. So the Thlinkit, the height of the Tsimshian people, they really decided that, hey, we're going to take back our culture and we're going to celebrate it. We're going to have celebration.
Celebration is a big festival that happens in Juneau every 2 years. Thousands of people from across Southeast Alaska and Canada gather to honor and uplift Indigenous culture. Some arrive by canoe.
It's a really significant deal. It's the same waters that our people have paddled in since time immemorial.
That's Brandon Ware. He's a member of Petersburg Indian Association's Tribal Council. He says a group of several canoes from around the region is meeting up in Petersburg to travel together to Juneau, camping and visiting villages along the way, a tradition known as journey. And Ware says launching the days-long journey from Petersburg is another big first for the community.
With this revitalization that's been going on here, I was really pushing, let's have a canoe journey out of Petersburg. And the group was incredible and said, we'd love to do that, because they also recognize that Petersburg is Thlinkit Ani, that it's Thlinkit land, that there's villages all around here, and that there, we have history and stories that tie not only to the surrounding area, but right here on Mitkoff Island. And so this is such a big deal for our community, and we're so excited to be able to do this. This is something that connects us to our way of life and to our ancestors and to the people that have come before us in this area.
Ware says it takes a lot of time, money, and planning to prepare for Journey and to host the 80 to 100 or so people who will launch canoes out of Petersburg together. Canoes will launch at the end of May. But first, after getting a layer of clear coat, the canoe will be unveiled, named, and blessed. Ware says Garcia did an incredible job representing their vision for the community's killer whale canoe.
And I mean, it's beautiful. And I'm excited to unveil it, and I'm excited for people to see it.
Celebration starts June 3rd. Reporting in Tlingit Ani, in Petersburg, I'm Olivia Rose.
Petersburg Indian Association is unveiling and blessing the canoe at Sandy Beach on Sunday, April 19th at 3. And Petersburg Indian Association also accepting donations and applications for anyone interested in joining the canoe journey as pullers. You can find more information on PIA's tribal website, piatribal.org. Also, starting tomorrow, there will be a class in making paddles for the journey, and you can find more information about that as well online at piatribal.org. The city of Gustavus does not have its own public works department, so it cannot process its own septic waste. The community of less than 700 people shipped that waste to Juneau for years. But as KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, that longtime practice came to an abrupt end last year, and now both cities are trying to figure out their options.
Households and businesses in the rural community of Gustavus rely on septic systems. And for years, a private company from Juneau ferried over to pump them out. But then the city and borough of Juneau stopped accepting septic waste from Gustavus last March due to concerns over the impacts of PFAS-contaminated sludge. PFAS are called forever chemicals since they don't break down naturally. They're toxic, known to cause severe health problems, and they're everywhere, including in human waste. High concentrations of PFAS afflict the city of Gustavus since firefighting foams containing the chemicals were sprayed at the airport, upstream from neighborhoods. Now, many people living in Gustavus worry about what to do when their septic tanks fill up, like Norma Fleek.
I don't know. I really don't have a plan for it.
She spends around half the year in Juneau and the other half in Gustavus. Before she had a septic tank installed in the 1990s, she said her family dumped waste in a large hole on the Gustavus property. She says she might have to dig another big hole if Juneau won't reconsider taking her waste.
If there are places in Gustavus that are PFAS-free, it would seem to me that at least they could allow those properties to be collected and accept that septage.
Fleek says her drinking water well has not tested high for PFAS, unlike some others in town. It was no secret that Juneau had been processing septic waste from Gustavus. It had been going on since the Alaska Marine Highway System brought ferry service there in 2011. Despite that, Juneau's engineering and public works director, Denise Koch, says she only found out about it in 2025, when the city of Gustavus began looking at long-term ways to deal with its waste stream. The contractor doing the study reached out to Juneau City staff. That's when Juneau's Public Works Department sent a letter to the city of Gustavus telling them to stop sending their septic waste. Koch told KTOO last month that it was because Juneau's wastewater treatment plants have to comply with permits issued by the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. Those permits restrict toxic contamination in treated wastewater that's released back into the environment. And they require the city to conduct toxicity testing.
We know that PFAS is an emerging contaminant. We don't know if Gustavus's septage would cause a problem with those whole effluent toxicity tests.
Those tests help ensure wastewater facilities meet federal Clean Water Act standards. And PFAS tests last spring showed solids in Gustavus's septic waste did contain some forever chemicals. But Sam Dapsovich, a spokesperson at DEC, wrote in an email to KTOO that there are currently no regulatory limits on PFAS in wastewater effluent, and there's nothing in the city's permits that would prevent them from taking septic waste from Gustavus. In correspondence between Juneau City staff and DEC, which was provided to KTOO, city staff say the state gave Juneau conflicting guidance. Koch says the city is planning to meet with state environmental regulators to talk about the issue soon. Kathy Leary is the city administrator for Gustavus. She says the small town doesn't have the authority to set up its own wastewater treatment facility since it doesn't have a public works department to oversee it. So she says the town is not equipped to manage the waste on its own.
There's not a whole lot we can do short of what we were doing, and maybe trying to work with Juno and ADEC to come to terms with, you know, allowing the small amounts that we have to be injected into their system. But again, we're not there yet.
Leary says since no one is coming to pump, some residents are thinking about other ways to deal with the waste. She says some have installed elevated leach fields to try to prevent E. coli and fecal coliform from contaminating shallow drinking water wells, and others are talking about digging a hole to dump it in. But neither solution will last forever. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
The fourth graders at Kodiak's Main Elementary School got their hands dirty during a salmon dissection last week. Biologists at the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association who ran the dissection say it's an important way for kids to connect with their local hatcheries. KMXT's Catherine Irving participated in the dissection and brings us this report.
No, what part is this?
Liver.
No, that's liver.
Liver.
The cafeteria at Main Elementary School smells unusually fishy on Monday afternoon. Plastic sheets cover the tables instead of lunch boxes, and instead of tasty snacks, Main Elementary's fourth graders hold salmon organs.
He grits on me!
People. The offending organ is part of a class dissection under a program called Salmon in the Classroom. This program isn't unique to Kodiak or even to Alaska. State agencies like the Department of Fish and Game make Salmon in the Classroom curriculum available to schools across the country. In Kodiak, where the program is run by KRAA, the program has been going on for over a decade.
I'm happy they're still doing it because when I went here, we also did a salmon dissection in the classroom in fourth grade.
That's Jeressa Reyes, a graduate of the Kodiak school system and an aide for some of the kids in this fourth grade class. She says watching these kids do the same dissection she did is a very full circle moment. Some kids are excited to share everything they know about salmon. Others are a little less jazzed.
I just don't like them because whenever I see something get dissected, I puke.
The insides, they gross me out.
Another big part of the months-long Salmon in the Classroom program is that the students get to raise baby salmon. KRAA sends over salmon eggs, which the teachers are in charge of incubating and then caring for. The kids get to watch the eggs grow up into fry over several months, then they will release them back into the wild. Amy Arneson is a fourth grade teacher at Maine who is helping run the salmon program. Standing next to the salmon tank, she says the program has been a great hands-on experience for the kids.
For them, seeing the process and everything makes it so much more real. Like, I'm just reading about it isn't quite the same as when they get to see it and notice, like, oh yeah, look at them using their swim bladders. Look, they do look like little toddlers trying to learn how to walk.
But that's not the only way the kids can connect to the salmon they raise. Kyle Wolliver, the research manager at KRAA, explains to the students how hatcheries can identify their fish when they're harvested.
These are called otoliths. They're the ear bones, and we put marks on them, just like this, with changing the water temperature, and that's the barcode to say where the fish came from.
Just like hatchery fish, the salmon the kids are raising at school have specific markings on their ear bones. So if a Maine fourth grader catches one of their salmon in the wild years down the line, they'll be able to tell it was theirs, according to KRAA biologist Tina Weaver.
And they'll even have the chance maybe to go back to the beach, Mill Bay, and catch them when they return back. So it's pretty cool that they get the chance to see the entire life cycle.
In Kodiak, hatcheries accounted for nearly 30% of the total salmon catch in 2025. The class will release their 250 salmon fry, if they all survive, that is, one by one into Island Lake in just over a month. They will eventually become food for other animals, part of a fisherman's catch of the day, or nutrients for forests and streams. Reporting from Maine Elementary School in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving.
And for local news, I'm Julie Hersey.